Hello, I'm Monkon McGann, and you're very welcome to the Big Adventure Podcast. This week we're looking at kayaking. Joining me is Rob Coffey, one of Ireland's leading whitewater kayakers, or paddlers, I think is better known, with over 10 years of whitewater experience around the globe. Also is Karen Weeks, Ireland's foremost female sea kayaker. She's also a diver, an ice climber, a surfer, a skier, a windsurfer, a mountaineer, blah, blah, blah. Look, I hate those lists, Karen. You make me feel so inadequate. But just, can you tell me first what sea kayaking is?
Sea kayaking is a form of kayaking that is done obviously on the sea, and basically you're in an 18-foot sea kayak. It's 18 foot long and it has a hatch at the front and a hatch at the back, so you can fit in your sleeping bag, your clothes, your stove, your all your gear, and you can see Ireland's coastline or coastline around the world. It's a really good way of seeing the coastline and birds and all the sea life around you.
And someone told me there's a system for paddling or for steering on it. Tell me about that.
Yeah, there's a rudder on the back of them. Basically, you steer it with your feet. So a line comes from the pedals back to the back of the boat to the rudder. Mm-hmm. And because the sea kayaks are so long, being 18 foot, they're quite difficult to turn. They're hard to manoeuvre. So when you're trying to turn, specifically in a crosswind or in a current that's coming on, you just push your foot one way or the other and that'll steer the kayak. So it assists your paddling stroke to turn the kayak in different conditions, you know.
And is it always a one-person thing? Could you put someone in each of those hatches, front and back?
No, the hatches would be too small.
Right.
So at the back, hatch is an oval hatch. So you can, it gives you more space to put in more gear. Yeah. And then at the front, it's just the full length of the kayak really is under the cover of the kayak itself. So you can keep your gear dry once you put it into dry bags. So
excellent.
When you land out on an island, you can take it out and everything hopefully is bone dry.
So it's the perfect sport for hermits. Basically, you're all on your own. You have all your own equipment with you.
You can get a double sea kayak, but most
sounds
people,
terrible. Far too intimate.
Yeah, very intimate.
Rob, is that the same sort of machine you use for kayaking, for white water kayaking?
Quite similar, but the white water kayak is a fair bit smaller and more manoeuvrable than the sea kayak. It's designed to navigate rapids down rivers and to run waterfalls and kind of big drops on rivers all around the place.
How did you get into kayaking?
Well, I started when I was about 12 or 13 years old. Dave Walsh, a friend of my dad's, got me into it. And basically, I just started paddling every weekend on rivers like the Liffey and the Boyne around Dublin and the Animo in County Wicklow. After university then, during university, I went off to the Zambezi River in Zambia when I was at the end of first year in college to work as a raft guide on the Zambezi. And I spent a season out there, spent a summer, and I kind of never stopped. I just kept going and I've been doing it pretty much constantly ever since.
And what's the point of it? Is it to get battered by the toughest rapids you can or what?
Well, some people seem to like that, but for me it's about getting out in the most beautiful parts of the world. When you're in a kayak, you can access places that no other form of transport can get to. So you can get to see parts of the world that simply are unavailable to the average person.
Where have you been?
Well, some of the more interesting trips I've done. Recently, we had an incredible trip up in the high Indian Himalaya, just near the Tibetan border. We ran an expedition on one of the rivers that runs off Mount Kailash, the Sarab Sanskar Indus, and we spent 10 days on the river in a gorge with absolutely no access by road or even by path. And in a place like that, we came across monasteries, 12th century Buddhist monasteries that exist in exactly the same way they have done for millennia, and simply no other way of getting there except by kayak. And we had an experience, you know, we spent a night with these monks, these Buddhist monks, which in this day and age is one of the few experiences like that left on this planet.
So. Yeah.
That's why I kayak.
Yeah, that's definitely a reason. What do they make of it? These traditional Buddhist monks up on top of monasteries seeing this Dayglow kayak coming at them down the river.
I guess you could see it as a clash of civilizations and cultures, but I see it more so as a way of going and seeing these places that few people will get to see, and it's a chance to see these things that very few people will have a chance to do so. The monks were incredibly friendly. In fact, I had to go for with the Grand Abbot brought me for tea, which was a great experience and a pleasure. But unfortunately, the yak's milk, which you put in the tea, I knew was going to make me sick. And of course, the next day on the river didn't feel so good, but I couldn't refuse it. But an incredible experience, and how these people live at 5,000, 4,500 metres. They live there year round. The most incredibly friendly and welcoming and open people I've met.
Tell me, what are the special areas you get to reach by sea kayaking?
Well, sea kayaking is incredible because you can go, you can access parts of the coastline that you can't get, it, as Rob said, in any other mode of transport, really. So, like, as you're going along the cliffs of Ireland or whatever country, you can go into caves and through arches. And getting into caves, once the waves aren't too big, it's fantastic. Like, for example, say off around the Salties or off the Blaskets, you can go into these massive caves that go in quite deep, and there's seals in there. And you just hear the "rrr" of the seals and the baby seals and the mama and papa seals. And it really, like, if you're going along the cliffs as well, you can come across gannet colonies and puffins and razorbills and guillemots and hundreds of them in their droves, and they just fly over you. And it's a non-invasive sport, so you can just glide up beside the seals or glide up beside the birds as well. So it gives you the opportunity to get really, really close to the wildlife that you wouldn't be able to do with an engine or whatever.
It sounds suicidal, Karen. I was talking last week to surfers, and I just couldn't get over this concept that they were daring to put themselves on that, you know, wild west coast. But you're doing it in even more ungainly vehicle, this 18-foot boat. How do you have any control of it?
Basically, the kayaks, sea kayaks come either in, they're made of Kevlar, fiberglass or plastic. So the plastic ones are wider generally and they're more stable. But the ones that we paddle are called Nordcaps, and they're quite narrow and they're fiberglass, but they cut through the water. And once you get a bit of speed and you're used to the kayak itself, you really have a lot of stability. So the only time really you might lose a bit of stability if you're turning in high seas, you know, if there's big pyramidal waves or surf or chop. So once you just keep the speed up and just keep your stability, they go through any type of sea. Like, they're just incredible. You can go through seas that a lot of boats wouldn't be able to go through.
But you're going into these caves, like Scooby-Doo caves or something, and the dark things with the noise of seals. How are you getting turning or getting out?
Sometimes you have to come out backwards. Like, sometimes you can go through, like, the old Hedican Sail, you can go through there, and there's very narrow parts and sections. Yes. And you go in and you have to put your paddle alongside the boat. Yeah. And then just push along with your hands. You can see the light at the other end, and it's fantastic. It really, really is fantastic. And one time I remember off Clare Island, off Donegal, we went in and we went quite in deeply into the cave. It's a massive big cave. Like, the back of Clare Island is incredible. And we were in a good bit, and then we needed our head torches. Mm-hmm. So they were in the hatches. So we had to come back out of the cave to take out the head torches. And next thing, this surge of a wave just went in and boom, the wave just hit the top of the cave roof. So we said, maybe we won't go in there this time.
Wow.
Leave it for another day.
So if you had been in there when the wave followed you in, you're basically crushed, aren't you?
We were snookered, yeah. So
right.
We were lucky.
Snookered, yeah. What a great word. What a frightening concept. Sounds like a nice adjective. And have you done much kayaking around Ireland?
Yeah, we, about, I suppose, 10 years ago now, Suzanne Kennedy and myself paddled around Ireland. I think we were the first women together that
around the entire coast.
Yeah, 40 days, and so we just lived out of our kayaks for the 40 days, and it was beautiful, fantastic.
Good.
Highly recommended.
How many hours kayaking a day?
It would range, really. You might be on the water for 8 hours, 10 hours, 14 hours, depending. Like, we used to just have our lunch out at sea, you know. Yeah. So basically, we followed the coastline except for the big open crossings.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can't. So, like Sligo Bay or whatever, it's 40 miles across. So you just went from A to B. But it was mad. It was brilliant. It was fantastic. We did it for cancer research, so it was a good cause as well. At the same time,
has it ever been done since?
Eileen O'Sullivan, I think, she paddled last year solo,
right,
herself, and there's been a good few guys have done it, but I think we're the only three ladies.
I know some people have gone around in an Avogue or a Curragh around there,
yeah,
but I didn't know about the kayaking. What about you, Rob? Journeys that really stand out for you, either in Ireland or abroad, in this river, in this white water kayaking, as opposed to sea kayaking?
Well, I guess the biggest trip I've ever done was with Ali Donald from Galway, and we were part of an expedition that did the first source to sea of the Blue Nile through Ethiopia, Sudan and Egypt.
And source to sea, so from Sudan, from Ethiopia, from the highlands of Ethiopia?
Yeah, from the very top to the very bottom. It had never been kayaked, never in history, and we were part of an expedition that the team were the first people to do it. Now, myself and Ali only took part in the mountain areas in the white water, mm-hmm, up in Ethiopia. And just in terms of a part of the world where there's no law, very lawless, very remote, and quite a challenging trip physically and mentally. But we succeeded, and two members of the expedition made it to the sea about 4 months after we set off.
And tell me what you were seeing. What's Ethiopia like? Is it the image we have of that, you know, the classic BBC late 80s image of famine?
No, not at all. In fact, quite the opposite. It was incredibly lush and verdant. It was quite high. The river starts in the in a plateau of about 10,000 feet of altitude. And the people there, curiously enough, had no concept of the famine of the 1980s. When you talked, certainly the area we were in, when we mentioned the famine, with quite educated people, we were just met with blank stares. So their view of their own history is quite different from what our view of it, meaning that they just aren't aware of the famine that we were so aware of at the time. But when we got there, we found that it one of the few places in the world where I would say is very, very, like, tribal in many ways, quite lawless, but at the same time we came across incredible hospitality and good people wherever we went.
What sort of food are you eating there?
That's the only food in the world, if you even mention the name of it. It's called injera, and unfortunately we got malaria when we were out there, which made us quite ill. So anyone who mentions injera, or if I even smell it, I actually feel really sick. So one of the few places I'm not too keen on the food.
Fair enough. Karen, has sea kayaking brought you to any places around the world with better memories than Ethiopia has from Rob?
Yeah, I suppose New Zealand and Australia have fantastic sea kayaking, and Brittany over in France, and the Hebrides, yeah, up off Scotland, the Hebrides and Harrison Lewis and the Uist. That's pretty spectacular up there.
Would that be even wilder than what you're getting off the west coast of Ireland?
Well, the west of Ireland can get fairly hairy too, you know, it can get pretty wild. So it's just different, you know, and the Scottish people are great, and it's good fun, you know. But yeah, like places like the Abel Tasman or the Milford Sound in New Zealand, that's really spectacular paddling. The Milford Sound is down in the south of New Zealand, and beautiful big fjords, like massive big cliffs again, but beautifully spectacular. But generally, I'd say that Ireland has the best sea kayaking that is for offer around the world.
Really?
I really would say that, definitely.
Why is that?
Just because it's so remote, and it's there's not many people out there. You rarely meet other paddlers, which is great. And you can just go to these remote places, like the islands off the west coast are, to me, the best places in the world, like Torrey Island or the Blaskets or even the Salties off Wexford or the Arran's. You just go out there and you set up your tent, you set up your little stove, and you needn't meet anybody for days if you want to, or you can go into the local pub, or, you know, it's a great way to see the west of Ireland, definitely.
And what would the Torrey Islanders think of you pitching up with your kayak?
I remember the first time we went out to Torrey, I'd say it was 1987, 1988 or something like that, and we two of us paddled out there, and we set up our tent in a little patch of grass up from the little slipway, and
Patsy Dan came out
to us with the kisses, right? And the next thing we just heard, we were asleep, you know, the next morning, next thing you hear, and it was a helicopter overhead, and we were on the helicopter pad, so we had to get out of the tent and move it fairly pronto. But the Torrey Islanders, they see a good few paddlers out there now, so it's a great way. The back of Torrey Island is beautiful as well, really. A lot of birds, a lot of steep cliffs, a lot of caves. It's not nice.
And for whitewater kayaking, you've been talking about something called grade five and grade six. Is there anything, first explain what that is, and is there anything equivalent to that in Ireland?
Well, there are, yeah. The grading system is a way of telling people how difficult a certain rapid or stretch of water is. Grade one being flat, so the Liffey would be grade one, maybe grade two in places, grade five being kind of the limit of what people do, and grade six we say is unrunnable because it's too dangerous. In Ireland there's certainly a lot of good kayaking in Wicklow and Kerry, places like the Flesk River down near Killarney. The rivers we have here tend to be quite small and low volume, surprisingly enough. We don't have many big whitewater rivers like in other parts of the world, but certainly Ireland's got quite a lot of good kayaking. These days we tend to travel a lot, so Ryanair has been a great saviour because we travel all around Europe, so it's quite common for us to go to Norway, for example. Last year we did an expedition to the far north of Norway, up near the Arctic Circle, and we spent 2 months up there kayaking 24 hours of daylight, so you could get in the water in the middle of the night, you could paddle all night because there is no night, and you're in the most pristine, beautiful parts of the Arctic Circle. No other people around, just reindeer and you know, beautiful wildlife. And we spent a month and a half up there kayaking virgin rivers every day.
You're listening to The Big Adventure. I'm talking to Rob Coffey, whitewater paddler, or kayaker, seems to be a more natural word for me, but I'm wrong. And also Karen Weeks, who is, as well as everything else, happens to be an incredible sea kayaker. Rob, tell me what was the food like up there? First, was there snow when you were in the Arctic Circle at that time?
No, and I'd highly recommend a trip to Norway during the summer because it's not like you'd imagine. In fact, the sun shone every day. It was 30 degrees and you have 24 hours of daylight. So it's an absolute paradise for any type of outdoor sports.
And there's not many people on it. Are the rivers full of other kayakers?
Absolutely not. We were the first group who'd been up on many of these rivers. So it was exploration. What you do is you get an OS map of the area. You look at the rivers, you look at the watershed to see how much water, rainfall will fall in the valley. And then you are looking at the gradient, so the contours and how steep the river will be. And sometimes you might find yourself in a gorge, an inaccessible gorge, and have to climb out because the river's completely unrunnable. You simply can't find a way through. But most of the time you can find, you can navigate it, and it becomes you have a beautiful day on the river.
So it's a bit like surfing, in other words, that you're looking at where they depend on the weather. They depend on that big wave. For you, you depend on there to be water, floods of water in that river.
That's correct. And in fact, we had quite an interesting experience this summer in India, up near Tibet, when we got caught out in a 30-year storm. It was the highest level in 30 years. Global warming, the area we're in up in Ladakh is a desert. It's a high-altitude desert of 5,000 metres. And this year, for the first time in decades, it rained, and it rained. The monsoon hits this area, and it stops. It doesn't go up into the high plateau. But this year, we were on the river, the Sarup, and it rained torrentially for 4 days, and we ended up having to walk off the river because it was in full flood. It was too dangerous to continue, and we had to walk off. It took us 3 days to walk off over 5,000 meter mountains. In a pair of river shoes and river gear, which isn't ideal. Any climber will tell you that's probably not ideal. But we got off the river successfully. Uh-huh. We sent in some local monks to carry our kayaks out, and we went back in a week later when the river dropped.
You got the monks to do your dirty work for you.
Yeah, we met these amazing monks, very interesting people who lived in this high area, and we negotiated with them, and they said, we'll get your kayaks for you, no problem. And we paid them well by their standards. They certainly they were eager to do the work. And we made some good friends, actually. One, we're still in contact with one of the monks. He has a PhD. He's the first guy from his village ever to go to school. Mm-hmm. And he kept going, going further and further. And now he has a PhD, and he's an incredible man.
Karen, Rob is really tempting us into bringing us up to Nepal and Ladakh, a place we both know and love, but we're determined we want to keep you on sea kayaking. Tell me, is there nice places in Europe? Is there places in the Mediterranean where you can go sea kayaking?
There's plenty of places. We've done a bit of sea kayaking over in Greece, around the islands there. We had yachts, and then we did a bit of kayaking as well. So between the sailing and the kayaking, it's a great way to see the Greek islands.
Yeah, because people think about yachts, but yachts can be quite expensive. And if you have children, it can be quite difficult because you're keeping an eye on these incredible, precious things. Kayaking sounds more doable.
Yeah, and when you go to these places, you can just rent out kayaks if you want to. So, you know, they're around the place. But going from island to island, it's beautiful, you know, different landscape than Ireland and whatever. And when you arrive in, then you can just go to the little local tavernas and meet the locals and sort of get to know a bit more of the culture from the Greece side of things. So it's interesting for sure. So
it seems such a lovely thing to do because you're there, it's not going to be too extreme. You're in your boat and you can be out in the sea. And I presume children could pick it up easy enough.
Kids could pick it up, surely, but I suppose if you started in a regular kayak first and then progressed onto the sea kayak, and there's plenty of places around Ireland that train people up. There's like Jim Kennedy is a place down in West Cork, mm-hmm. and he would set people up in, you know, teach them how to sea kayak, introduce them to various aspects of sea kayaking, and then he does trips to Mexico and all that sort of stuff.
Jim has had a few members of U2 out with him over the years.
They're into kayaking,
apparently. Yeah, he's got quite a big kind of famous guest list of people who go sea kayaking down there with him.
Have you come across this, Karen? Does it attract famous people?
Over in I taught kayaking over in East Hampton in Long Island. East Hampton is a place with the rich and famous, so a lot of the rich and famous live over there. And I came in from a kayak tour one time, and my boss said, he said, will you look after Paul? So I said I would, of course. And it was Paul McCartney. So I sold Paul McCartney.
That's famous enough.
I sold Paul kayak and paddles and all that sort of stuff. And I asked him, did he want to come on a tour? I was going out on a tour in an hour's time. Yeah. And he said he was going out in his little dinghy where we were going. So he said, I'll probably see you out there. Yeah. So I said, that's fine. So I had four really nouveau riche paddlers from New York. And they didn't have a whole pile of time for me. I was just the teacher. Yeah. And they were above me and beyond me. So I tried to make a bit of small talk, but they were having none of it. And the next thing, all I could see is Paul coming towards us and in his little dinghy, and he goes, hiya, Karen. I said, hiya, Paul.
You're and, Paul.
And all you can hear is the guys, you know him? And I said, he's a lovely fella.
Brilliant.
So is there a frisson now in the studio? I'm very conscious that I have to tiptoe between these two words. Karen Weeks is definitely a sea kayaker and Rob is a whitewater kayaker. Do you both have antipathy for each other? Karen, do you loathe what he does? You have no respect for river?
Not at all, no. I do a bit of river paddling myself, but not to the extent now that Rob do it. But it's different because what Rob is doing on those whitewater rivers is mad. Like, they're going down huge drops, risk to life and limb, I'd say, a lot of the time. With sea kayaking, you have the weather elements more. I think you'd agree, Rob. Like, you do have the wind would affect you and the waves and stuff, but it's far more open, so you're not constrained to a river. So you can go in along the cliffs, you can rock up, or if it's too choppy, you can go out further, go out to sea. So I think we'd have the extremes that way.
I kind of see it the other way. I think whitewater kayaking for me is a much more controlled risk, and you're always making informed decisions. But sea kayaking seems sometimes so dangerous because if the weather changes, you get caught in an offshore breeze. That's it. So while sea kayaking, most of the time it's a very safe sport. When something goes wrong, it goes wrong really quickly. And I think I have a lot of respect for anyone who does a lot of sea kayaking.
But you do not accept that claim of being irresponsible and mad. And yet, Rob, you make videos, you make DVDs of your work whenever you're away. And in fact, you manage to sell them. And I mean, this is a professional thing. But I was looking at the back of one of your DVDs and it says, you know, Rob, where is it? I think you were in Switzerland. And suddenly, Rob breaks his back and a helicopter comes and picks him up.
Yeah, well, that was definitely one of my... I hurt my back a couple of years ago kayaking Whitewater River in Switzerland, and I hit a rock. And in the course of hitting the rock, I managed to compress a vertebrae. And luckily, I had some very good friends there. Dave Carroll from Delgany pulled me out, and he's a wilderness EMT, and the best thing to do in that situation was to call a helicopter. But generally, whitewater kayaking is actually quite a safe sport, and something like that would very much be the exception to the rule. And it's, you know,
except for trees and rocks.
Yeah.
How long were you out for after that?
I was out for about six months, I think. But luckily, I had very good medical treatment and I healed up okay. So,
Rob, you were talking the tribes I want to know about that you meet up in these places. Like when you're going to Iran, you're going to Arctic Circle. China, last time you were in, where you said Mount Kailash,
up in Ladakh, up near up in India, yeah. The Indian Himalaya, and the people there are incredible. They have a system of land distribution which people will find interesting. They practice a system called polyandry. They're polyandraic, which means that when the father or when the son inherits the land, the eldest son inherits the land, so he picks a wife, mm-hmm. and then all the brothers in the household share the wife. But right. They share the wife.
Yeah.
But if it's the other way around, if the eldest daughter inherits the land, she picks a husband, and all the sisters share the husband. So I was trying to find out from the local guys as to how this works. But apparently, on any given night, if there's a pair of slippers outside the door, you don't go in. The brothers know, not tonight.
Mad. That is that other element, is the kind of travelling, where you come across something that just completely changes your outlook, your perspective.
Yeah, for sure.
At least sea kayaking, you're more or less safe because, yeah.
There's situations in sea kayaking too when you can give people frights. You don't mean to, but because they're so quiet, yeah, you know, you're not making any noise at all. And you might come up behind a fisherman in a boat and how are you doing? And I remember one time we were out in Inishtiracht, one of the Blaskets, and the only way you can land really, unless it's really, really calm, is to hop out of your kayak, just attach a line, swim in, you climb up the little bit of rock and then pull your kayak up after you.
Wait there, you hop out, you keep one rope tied to the kayak when you hop out?
Yeah, so... there's no real place to land.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You jump out into the water, tie a wee line, and then climb up the rock and then pull your kayak up afterwards. But we were walking up the steps and there was three of us and we were chatting away, you know, and we saw a guy standing there sort of staring out to sea. But he'd been out there for 2 weeks doing maintenance on the lighthouse, you know, and he hadn't seen us landing. So we were there, how are you doing? Went white as a ghost.
Because there is a famous ghost in Inishtiracht, actually.
Is there?
Yeah, there's a poem about it. I presume this is a stupid question, but is there any chance of fishing from a sea kayak?
Oh yeah, all the time. It's great, you just have your little hand line. I'm famous for it, I have to say. But your little hand line, your six feathers, and you stick it out for the mackerel. I remember one time I caught three big pollock, you know, and I was pulling, it nearly capsizes you sometimes, and I pulled up these three pollock and I was there going, what am I going to do with them now, you know, they were too big for me, you know. So stupidly, I was thinking if I cut them free, because they were going to capsize me, if I cut them free, they'd be able to swim away. But so I cut them off, it's the three some straight down. I was thinking, you can really catch a lot of fish. It's great. Just catch the mackerel, put them on. I have a little net on the back of the hat on the back of the deck, behind the cockpit, and the mackerel go in there, and then you have them for when you go in and when you land, you have them for your dinner.
You're a real Robinson Crusoe, aren't you, Karen?
It's actually incredible when you in British Columbia when you're white water kayaking in some of the big rivers like the Fraser River, Thompson River. Mm-hmm. The salmon run in September. And they run in such numbers that when you're kayaking, you're putting a blade into the water, you're hitting salmon as they run through the rapids, and you can see them in their hundreds and hundreds of thousands running up the rivers. Incredible. You're keeping your eye out for bears, of course, because where there's salmon, there are always bears.
Just chatting about other animals too, you know, we've done a lot of paddling with Fania, the dolphin up off Clare, Fungi down in... Dingle, but the kayaks are great for the dolphins because they go mad for them. You know, you can get your paddle and rub it down the side of the dolphin because it gives them a bit of a scratch. You know, they have these little lice, so they really love it, and they sort of push their body up against the paddle. And if you capsize then, and if you have a mask on, they sort of come up with their little noses looking at you, and you can see their faces, and it's great for the seals as well. So it's a great way to see dolphins, seals, whatever you want to see. It's good.
And are there any sea kayaking journeys that you really want to do yet? Did you want to do again?
Yeah, there's so many that I want to do, but hopefully next year we're hoping to get down to Antarctica maybe. It's just logistics of getting boats and stuff down there, and the cost obviously as well.
Yeah. Any journeys? What about you, Rob?
I mean, there's so many rivers to run around the world. I'd like to go to Tibet and do some rivers there. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to look for is first descents, rivers that haven't been done before. And
are there still any left?
Oh, there's dozens and hundreds, hundreds around the world, yeah. And some great ones in Tibet that we might do next year.
Thank you so much, Rob Coffey and Karen Weeks, for giving us some insight into the world of kayaking. Thanks for listening to the Big Adventure Podcast, a Mixed Bag Media production for RTE.